Welcome once again to the HTC Wrestling / Inside Pulse Wrestling Pulsecast. It is Thursday night, October 24th, and after a brief couple of week hiatus, for me and Cam goes, and then for Matt, it was a little bit longer. The entire band is back together, so we just want to welcome you all back to our show. Obviously, we got a lot to talk about today, considering we've been absent for the last couple weeks. So just real quick, Matt, Cam, how are you guys doing today? Matt, how about you?
Exhausted. You said I was gone for a couple of weeks. I think I was gone for like 2 months. This is ridiculous. But, I'm basically running on no sleep. I think I ate today. So, yeah, I'm going good. So, yeah.
Good, Cam, how about you?
Hello?
But first show back and we lost Cam already? Come on.
No, I was like, I'm here. I was like, I no one said anything. I was like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
He ruined it. Yeah. That means talk.
Oh, do I have anything to say? Yeah, it's good to be back. I'm sorry we missed the last couple shows. I've had some personal things to take care of, but I'm glad to be back and writing again on HTC and for Pulse. I was just watching Main Event before we started doing the show, so it's nice to see Goldust. It makes me feel like 13 years old again.
God,
yeah, it's almost like so yeah, we have a lot to talk about. We'll get to Goldust and Main Event and WWE and all that stuff later on in the show. Before we get started, it's a live call-in show today, so if you're out there listening, you want to give us your thoughts on something, you want to ask us a question, anything wrestling related, the number is 818-532-9786. You can call in any time. Matt will let me know when there's a caller on there. We'll buzz you in. For those of you who haven't called in before, it's basically would be like the PW Torch live cast. We'll say your area code if you're the caller, ask your name, where you're from, and then obviously what kind of question you have for us. So feel free to do that and call in any time, like I said. And just a quick slight plug, like I always try to do for the last couple of shows, if you go to htcwrestling.com, right there on the right-hand side of the screen, the red bubble that says RV for Redbubble, you click on that. We have a bunch of different T-shirts there inside of our store shop to look at. We got a Daniel Bryan one. We have some TNA stuff, CM Punk, the Wyatt family, all of that stuff. Like I say all the time when I say this, we support the site by ourselves. Any kind of help you guys want to give us, our loyal readers, feel free to go ahead and do that. So like I said, it's right there on the side, the red circle. Click on that, check out some of those shirts, see what you like, and hey, give us some help whenever you can. So after that plug and everything else, we're going to move right in to the wrestling portion of this show. Like I said, it's been a couple weeks since we've been around, so I'm sure we have a lot to say. Before we get into the WWE, we'll touch on TNA. Over the last couple weeks here. Obviously, there's a lot of news coming out of there. I'm almost wondering at points what the stability and long-term future of the company is going to be. They just had their so-called biggest event of the year, Bound for Glory, which technically is the WrestleMania. And if you heard the Blue TNA's podcast, it's one of the largest attended events they've ever had. And then when you look at the pictures from the show, you probably see that and question that as far as you go there. If you saw about half of that convention center in San Diego empty. But there's a lot of moving things going on in TNA right now. Hulk Hogan is still a free agent. We don't know if he's going to come back or sign with TNA, go back to WWE. Nobody really knows if that. And their TV tapings, they've canceled every TV taping after this week's. I believe this week's is the last one on the road. And they'll be going back to Orlando, Universal Studios, where they had been for a couple of years, finished filming out the year there. And they actually just sent out a press release today for this new, I had it written down somewhere, the name that it's called, but it's Live Interaction Arena. It's supposed to be filming the superstars 24/7 as they go about their days and TNA wrestling and all that stuff. So, like I said, there's a bunch of stuff going on there. I guess let's throw it to you since you haven't been on the show the longest, Matt, so we'll hear your voice first, Matt. What are your thoughts on Bound for Glory overall as a show? I know me and you both covered it for HTC Wrestling, and you were doing the Pulse Wrestling Twitter feed there as well. Why don't you give us your thoughts on that and just the long-term viability of TNA in the future?
Well, I think it's pretty safe to say that people have been predicting TNA's demise every year since they launched. I mean, it's just that type of company where it was a grassroots company. It started out with a very odd business model of doing weekly pay-per-views. That paid off for them, and they took a risk, and it just kept growing and kept growing. And only recently, in the past 3 or 4 years or so, has it just stagnated. And it seems like it should be at the point where it should be growing. Everybody thought that once they went on the road, it would be a good thing for the company. It's obviously hurting the company more than it should be helping it. You can't really put the blame on one person with this. There's a lot of factors that go into running a wrestling company, and there's a lot of factors that go into putting on a good show. And right now, nothing seems to be clicking. And that's pretty hard to swallow when you're supposed to be making all these huge strides in your corporation and in the business in general, and you can't seem to catch a break. And Bound for Glory was a perfect example of that. It was everything that's wrong with the company rolled up into 3 excruciating hours of television, I guess you could still call it. I honestly, as watching it, it was interesting because I had watched Impact maybe 3 weeks ago or so, and just been watching the recaps since then, just keeping up with everything. And I was going into the show obviously not excited for it, but going into it kind of clear-headed, hadn't seen TNA in a little while, hoping, considering it's Bound for Glory, hoping that something would catch my attention, draw me in. I thought Ultimate X was going to be interesting, considering it was the first time Jeff Hardy was in it, and you had a lot of different veterans in the match that had been in Ultimate X before, so it could be something different. In the end, it turned into a ladder match, which made no sense to me whatsoever. And I mean, besides that, the only other thing I was looking forward to is AJ Styles and Bully Ray. And by the end of the night, it was essentially the same match that Bully Ray's been pulling out recently, where he's cutting up the ring and, oh wow, the ring's made of wood. Wow, yeah, we know. And then for them to completely rip off the entire finish of Money in the Bank in 2011, it seemed like a slap in the face. I mean, I was giving them leeway in the fact that, okay, they're going with the no contract thing, and that if he has to win the title, if he's going to remain employed, and then if he wins the title, he's gonna ask for a big contract or whatever it is. Like, okay, I'll let them go with that route. It's fine. But the way they had Dixie Carter come down, had her interfere in the match, had her try to sway the referee, and then to top that all off, have AJ Styles leaving through the crowd and celebrating in the crowd with the TNA fans. And like I wrote on Twitter, it was a good thing he went to the side of the auditorium that actually had fans in it. But the fact that he was standing out there with the championship next to a fan with the CM Punk t-shirt, I thought it was a pretty ironic twist. And then to close out the pay-per-view with him, like, turning around and walking out of the arena as if he was leaving the arena with just that way, the exact same way CM Punk pulled it off 2 years ago. It left a bad taste in my mouth, and this is wrestling. Wrestling has stories rehashed and redeveloped and redone over and over and over again. If you're a wrestling fan for longer than 5 years, you've seen the same storyline at least 3 times. But this was a giant storyline for the WWE, and it's only been 2 years. Just a little over 2 years since they did it. And for them to try to recapture the magic of that storyline only 2 years later, I think showed the lack of depth they have in their creative department right now, and the way that they're just kind of grasping at straws and trying to pull off anything to get people to watch, and it's not working. It's making the product feel stale. It's making it feel like a cheap knockoff, and it's I think driving people away. I have the same problem with WWE pay-per-views lately. I think WWE has different problems, but I think they're driving their fan base away, and they're doing it on pay-per-view, which is the worst place they could do it. But for TNA, it's every indication right now is bad. They don't have anything. Usually there's one or two good things that you can point at, like, oh, at least they have this going for them. Right now, everything looks pretty dismal, and it's sad to say, but like I said, since they launched, people have been talking about, oh, TNA is going out of business in a year, TNA is going to go out of business in 2 years, and they've been able to overcome that, so they could pull something out, but I've never seen it this hopeless. I hate to say, but that's what it feels like right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've been watching Bob Roark. I've been covering Impact the last few months on ACC Wrestling. And watching Bob Roark, I saw some of his art perfectly as like a glorified episode of Impact, where they had the big matches and the payoffs to that, but it didn't feel or have the pay-per-view feel to it. I mean, you go just everything about the pay-per-view. You had Kurt Angle turning down the Hall of Fame induction after going through a whole speech to that before and basically accepting it there, and then turning down, you know, Sting, the watch from Sting and everything inside the ring. And then they had, you know, the match of Bobby Roode and Kurt Angle, which I thought was probably the match of the night up until the ending, which I don't know. I'm actually happy Kurt Angle kind of got up, because I really got to the point where I thought they were going to do like a paralysis angle with Kurt Angle, and considering what happened with Jesse Sorensen there back earlier this year, I believe it was, I had a long rant planned out on my 10 thoughts, but thankfully Kurt Angle at least got up, so I didn't have to worry about doing that. The Sting-Magnus match kind of just felt all thrown together. It wasn't that good. Like you said, the Ultimate Smash was, I thought, too short in the first place. And like you said, then they bring in a ladder into the match, which kind of defeats the purpose of making it a unique match, and you have a ladder involved. And then the world title match, like you said, I thought going into it, it had somewhat of a, not obviously really big fight, but like the main event feel kind of from the show. But then even like you said, the match in general, typical Bully Ray match, it was almost like they were just moving from one spot to the next. They would do one big spot and then take, like, you know, do the rest spot and then move to the next big spot. And I was kind of expecting more action from both of those guys going into the match. So like you said, I thought it was let down by the whole show overall. But like you said, Matt, you know, TNA, everybody keeps predicting their demise almost every single year when something bad happens to them. And they always find some way to keep going and get, like, you know, get just enough money from somebody to keep it going. And I think moving back to Orlando is a smart thing for now. You want to stabilize the situation there. You want to try to recoup some of your revenue losses that you got from going and filming live on the road every couple weeks. So that's smart there. Work out a deal with Orlando. Try to maybe get the morale. I don't know how you could get the morale of talent back up. I'm sure they wanted to go live. But, you know, get things settled back down there, and then maybe hopefully something happens where you see a spike in TV ratings, or you start seeing some money slowly starting to go back into the company. And then maybe later on you want to see them go back out on the road. So I think in order for TNA to be successful long-term, they have to start building up and getting more of a fan base out somewhere. I know they have a lot of problems as far as their shows go. They don't promote it locally very well, and that's why you have such small crowds out there for all their shows. So I agree that I want to see, you know, I think the more, you know, competitive wrestling companies there are from the WWE, you know, it's good for them. Obviously, TNA is nowhere near the level of WWE right now, but you want to see competition in the wrestling business so you don't just have this one giant on top basically being the end-all, be-all pro wrestling. So I think it's better that hopefully TNA does succeed, you know, in the future and starts to recoup some of their losses and get some more fan support there and hopefully change things around, you know, in the coming months where they can, you know, focus more on their wrestlers and build them up, you know, start in Orlando and hopefully get back to the point where they can go back on the road. Kim, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I didn't actually watch Don for Glory. I have a hard enough time convincing myself to pay for WWE pay-per-views most of the year. But reading the whole thing about the Kurt Angle thing, that's one thing I really want to touch on. Like him, you know, not wanting to be in their Hall of Fame and them using that as an angle, I think it was just kind of them taking a shot at their own companies. The Hall of Fame isn't supposed to, it's supposed to be separate from the, I guess, kayfabe world like the WWE Hall of Fame is. It's, you know, it's separate from the wrestling. You know, they can break character and talk about their career. Like Kurt Angle's not supposed to turn down that. He, you know, they can't use it as an angle. I think it's kind of stupid that they want to go that route with Kurt Angle, but I guess it's their company to burn to the ground. Like you said, I think it's a great thing that they want to go back to Orlando. That's probably the smartest thing for them to do. I mean, they probably don't, like you said, they don't draw very much out there, but at least it's not costing them hundreds of thousands of dollars to operate a show, and they got to fly out all their talent to wherever they're going to be that week. And so TNA as a whole, I don't know, I kind of feel like we keep saying the same thing as we talk about TNA every time we bring it up on the show, but until they can really establish, like, a company model for what they want to do, they're just going to keep going down. Again, to touch a little bit on that idea of their new show about Hulk Hogan's basically brainchild to film TNA wrestlers all the time, they're just going to try to make basically a reality show. I'm not sure if anyone will pick it up. I feel like it's more going to be like on their website, and they, well, I don't know how to like judge if it's going to be very successful or not, because if the WWE would do that, I think you would have a big fan base or something like that, and I think they probably could get it on like a network how they did for Total Divas. But TNA, who really wants to watch Sting, like, you know, drink coffee for 14 hours a day just to stay awake from the match that night?
I agree. I don't know. I read the press release for them today, and I don't know how that's going to translate well. I don't know if there's a big enough for TNA to actually have their fans follow that for however long they plan on doing that. And then, you know, real quick, you kind of just brought his name up, Peter Kim. I know Kim and I have discussed Hulk Hogan and TNA before, and we're both kind of the agreement that if TNA were smart, you know, despite how big of a name he is, and you know when they go and meet with potential, like, you know, advertisers and investors, and they see the name Hulk Hogan associated with the company, that probably is a boost to TNA in their eyes. But it seems like Hulk Hogan has really done nothing as far as its new product goes to help better TNA. And I know, like I said, Kayla and I have talked about this before, we're both kind of the agreement that if TNA moved on from Hulk Hogan, we think it's the best for them. And I guess, Matt, do you agree with that assumption, or do you think that just the name Hulk Hogan overall being associated with your company can be good for them and maybe help them in the long run?
The name would help their company if people realize the company existed. I think that's their problem. If people knew TNA was a viable option and alternative to WWE, and they saw Hulk Hogan was part of the corporation, yeah, then it would be a benefit to them. But people don't know TNA exists. You saw that. I mean, I've been saying it for years, but you saw it straight from the horse's mouth when RVD said on his radio show that people come up to him in airports and on the street when he was in TNA asking, well, what he's doing, why he's not wrestling anymore. And he's like, no, I am wrestling, just down in Florida in this other company. I'm like, oh, I never saw you on television. Oh, yeah, we have a weekly TV show. Like, that's the general feeling of a wrestling fan, is most people do not realize TNA exists. And if they realize it exists, they don't know who's on the show. So, yeah, a name like Hulk Hogan, a name like Kurt Angle, Sting, those names would bring in viewers if people knew where to watch them, what it was, and, like, if they knew that this was an alternative to WWE. But that's always been a really weak point for TNA. They've never been very good as far as advertising and promoting themselves and getting themselves out there. That was originally the reason why Hulk Hogan was brought in, and it never took off after that. They just kind of assumed once people saw Hulk Hogan's name and their name together that it would mean news headlines, and it doesn't. You have to do more work than that. So if they were to make the effort of pushing the company first, I could see it. I could see him, and I could see just his name recognition or anybody's name recognition making a difference. But they're not pushing the company first. They're trying to get individual people out there first, and people didn't realize what they were watching, where to find what they were watching, what it is, or what TNA could possibly stand for. And it was just a failure on pretty much everyone's part.
Then, Cam, I'm assuming you're still, me and you are still in agreement that you don't think Hulk Hogan long-term is the best for TNA?
Oh, yeah, babe. I completely agree with what Matt said, but if they're going to have a horrible marketing scheme where they're basically WrestleMania to even sell out past the 100 section, I think they know they have a big problem. So, yeah, if they're going to keep with the same route and not try to fix anything, then, yeah, names like Hulk Hogan and Steam like need to go, because those contracts, I'm sure, could easily 4 or 5 or 6 mid-card guys could easily fill up that contract spot right there and actually contribute to a weekly show instead of just being a name that may or may not be on TV and more than likely will not wrestle.
Yeah, I kind of been thinking the last couple weeks on Impact. I thought Sting has almost been going through the motions. I don't know if he's going to maybe just retire or maybe he'll do his one final run in the WWE, but I think that the more they start maybe taking the ship off of Sting and Hulk Hogan and start going to their younger homegrown talents, the better for them. But that should end our TNA portion of the show here right now. So we're going to transition to, obviously, the big dog here, WWE.
Oh, wait. Before you end the TNA portion, you got to plug the fact that we have TNA merchandise saying that they die this year. Is this year or next year? I don't remember. It's a memorial T-shirt for them, and we have a six-sided ring memorial T-shirt. But those are on the Redbubble site that Justin plugged earlier. And if they don't go out of business this year, I'll update it for next year. So who knows? But those are on the site. If you really don't like TNA or are just nostalgic for the TNA used to be at least entertaining, if not widely watched.
Yep, those are there. So like I said, support us as much as possible, because the more we get to see your support and the more of your money that we get, the more content we can bring you. So going on now to the WWE portion, like we said, we haven't been around for the last couple weeks, so it's kind of, I don't know if there's really been too much that's happened. Obviously, the big story, obviously, is Shawn Michaels being brought back for the WWE title match this Sunday at Hell in a Cell, which obviously we'll get to our preview later. So I guess we'll start with you, Cam. What are your – we'll start focusing with us focus on a WWE title situation as we have right now. What are your thoughts on how it's been booked the last couple of weeks? I guess since we haven't been on since the show the Thursday before Battleground, I guess maybe from Battleground to now, what are your thoughts on how the whole WWE title picture has been booked overall in the addition of Shawn Michaels as the referee to the match this Sunday?
I think the last time we were on the show, we were both in agreement that it was a really good build, and then it kind of just flatlined once the news of John Cena coming back. So I kind of feel like the WWE was just waiting around for him to come back to get back in the main event picture, and it's kind of been the same. Adding Shawn Michaels, I guess, added another element of making it, quote, real, as Daniel Bryan, Shawn Michaels trained Daniel Bryan, and you have that whole element of will Shawn Michaels turn on Triple H, and you have, a little bit more element of realism compared to just Randy Orton against Daniel Bryan for the millionth time now. It was a fresh new feud, and now I'm kind of almost to say sick of it. I wish Daniel Bryan could move on to somebody else, even though Randy Orton's work has been good, but it's kind of like their feud has hit its peak and it kind of just needs to go away. I don't think adding Shawn Michaels does enough service to do it. I think that, I'm still thinking that somewhere John Cena is probably going to end up headlining this freaking pay-per-view, and for the first time that the World Heavyweight title will main event a pay-per-view in its history, unless anything else.
No, you're off. You're off because I'm Edge was headlining pay-per-views with The Undertaker for a long time when he was champion. And Triple H also held the World Heavyweight Championship, so that was always a headline match.
True. Okay. I'm glad that Matt's back, so he's like, he can just tell me when I'm wrong all the time.
that's the point. What, you think I host this for fun? No.
But, I don't know, I think that, hopefully I think it comes to a head this Sunday, and then we'll get some sort of change in the whole main event scene, and something happens different with The Shield and The Big Show and all that, but who knows, with the WWE, we might just get more weeks of Big Show riding around on other objects that couldn't fit into the arena. Maybe he'll fly Vince McMahon's jet into Battleground, or to Hell himself.
Yeah, I actually really thought, you know, if the ramp wasn't there, I was really hoping that we would have gotten like this, the whole recreation of the scene with Austin, you know, when Austin drove the Zamboni out there and jumped the Vince McMahon. I was really hoping Big Show would just drive the semi out there and just jump over the semi onto, you know, Triple H and just start fighting it. But I think that would have been hilarious to watch. But just pretty much going back to Battleground, you know, I was there live, and that was just, that was such a bad taste, and not only my mouth, but almost, I would say, everybody that was in attendance at that show. I mean, when the show was over, there was bullshit chants. There was, you know, I heard refund chants at some point. You know, you don't want to leave that kind of end of pay-per-view event like that. You know, if it happened on an episode of Raw, you know, I think people could live with it because they didn't have to pay for it. But if you were in attendance and saw that, if you paid money for the pay-per-view and saw that, I think you would be furious that you didn't get a decisive finish to your match. And yes, I know it's sports entertainment, but you expect these things, you know, to see finishes, and that didn't happen. And then, you know, adding Shawn Michaels into it obviously just plays up to the whole Triple H story. And it also kind of creates a little bit of a problem, as I said in my Raw report this past week, is that that final contract segment, which I put in the part of the show that I didn't like, just had so many different stories in it being connected, where you had, you know, the Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton story, and then they reopened the Daniel Bryan Triple H story that kind of took a back burner for the last couple of weeks. And then you have Big Show getting involved, and you have the Big Show versus, you know, Triple H story that they're trying to tie into that. And then, you know, Shawn Michaels, Randy Orton doesn't like Shawn Michaels, and you have that story, and then you have the Shawn Michaels training Daniel Bryan story. And it's just so many stories are trying to tie into one thing, where they just could have kept it simple and maybe tried to do just the Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton story. And then you add the whole Shawn Michaels teaser into it. Like I said, we'll get into the preview later, what we think might happen. Anytime Shawn Michaels is back on TV, I like, because obviously he's my favorite wrestler of all time, but I don't know what he adds to the story unless he plans on being back around long term, or if they plan on using him at some point down the line for another match. But I'm in agreement with you, Cam, that this story has been played out so much, you know, over the last couple months, that I'd like to see it end this Sunday. They have this whole 3 pay-per-view and like 7-week stretch. I think it would be a final wrap up, and then, you know, freshen things up as far as Survivor Series goes. Not only with the WWE title picture, but also with, you know, the CM Punk Paul Heyman story. As far as, you know, I'm of the belief that I don't think John Cena's main event, simply because if you have a main event of your pay per view not be called, if you have the main event of your pay per view called Hell in a Cell not be the Hell in a Cell match, then there's something wrong up there. So, I think the WWE title picture has kind of been, you know, iffy the last couple of weeks, and hopefully this Daniel Bryan Randy Orton feud ends with this third match here. Matt, what are your thoughts?
Where to start? it's been a while, and although I have not been on the show, and I haven't been, well, I've been writing. If you follow along with either of the sites, you've seen my quick thoughts. Just started back up the 10 thoughts columns, which I apologize, but this past week's Raw just went up a few minutes ago. I think it went live on our site about an hour ago, and it's on Inside Pulse now. But starting with Battleground, if you read my Battleground report, this was part of the thing that I alluded to when we were talking about TNA, is WWE is, I feel, burning a lot of bridges with their pay-per-view. They've had 2 shows in a row now where people have paid money for a show that has not lived up to the potential. That's being a mark. And I say that in the most respectful way possible. That's somebody that's just a hardcore fan who just wants to sit there and be entertained by the show, and doesn't want to know any of the backstage stuff, doesn't want to know anything. And if you don't feel that it lived up to that quality, fine. What they've done in the last two shows is not give anything to the people who paid money to watch their product. They've only booked for the following night on Raw. And we saw this problem at WrestleMania. We saw it happen at WrestleMania. Yeah, we got one or two good matches, but at the end of the night, nothing really changed until the following night. And that was a major, major problem to me. And I hate to see that this trend is continuing. We know WWE has been having a lot of problems selling their pay-per-views, have had a lot of problems selling the DVD release of their shows when they come out on DVD. They used to sell for $25, $30. Now they're down to about $14, $15. They're having a problem with their pay-per-views. They know that. I don't understand how they can jump from, we're having problems with our pay-per-views, so let's not book anything on the pay-per-view, but just give people some matches, and then we'll do all the storytelling on television. That's backwards booking to me. That you should be doing your storytelling on television so people want to buy the show at the end of the month. Granted, this month had two shows in this month, which is ridiculous. I stated at the very beginning of this month how ticked off I was that it was October, because that just means three pay-per-views that I have to cover, and eventually you just want to start ramming your head against the wall. But this month in particular, to have it start out the way that Battleground did, and then to move on to Bound for Glory, and now we have Hell in a Cell, it's like, it's got to get better. It can't really get worse. But as far as the build for the WWE title, I'm actually, instead of trying to stumble through this, I'm actually just going to read my last thought on my column, just because it's nice and as succinct as I can get it with all the crap that was going through it. So, I'm just going to read this off really quick. It said, okay, yeah, the promo for Triple H did absolutely nothing positive for this match. The pay-per-view, or who should be a top babyface for years to come, Daniel Bryan. There's been a lot of controversy around that promo, and I think it's a lot of undue controversy, and it wasn't as bad as I was expecting it to be. If you listen closely, he said that Edge, Jericho, and RVD were top guys, but not at the level of Stone Cold Steve Austin. Not an Undertaker, not a Rock, not a John Cena. Not many people in the history of wrestling have been at that level. Could Jericho and Edge have carried the WWE in their primes? Probably. Would the WWE have reached the peaks it did with The Rock and Austin on top? Probably not. That's not a shot at those guys. I think I've made it pretty clear in the past how much I respect Edge and Jericho and believe that they are the two of the best I've seen in my life, and there are a ton of factors that play into somebody becoming, for the lack of a better phrase, the face of a company. Austin and Rock hit their stride exactly when wrestling hit its stride as a whole. Right guys, right time, legendary results. So for Triple H to compare Daniel Bryan to Edge and Chris Jericho, I didn't see that as a burial, but as a reminder to the audience that there were guys Daniel Bryan's size before that achieved a lot, and he can too. That said, this was the wrong time for that promo, and thank God Shawn Michaels was there being able to play the voice of reason in the segment. When you're looking to get millions of people to pay $60 for essentially a television show, you want to give them a taste of what they want. This segment accomplished that in the final moments when Orton was laid out by Bryan after the completely unnecessary arrival of the Big Show. But the final moments were overshadowed by what's become a bigger story than it should be in Triple H's promo. I'm looking forward to Hell in a Cell for a strange reason. Not for the matches, the segments, or title changes. I'm looking forward to the show because a lot of the signs are pointing to this pay-per-view as being a pivotal chapter in many of the current stories. I want a WWE champion, and I don't care who it is. Get Cena back on television so we don't have to keep worrying about when he'll make a, quote, surprise return. CM Punk finally gets Paul Heyman locked in the steel cage so Heyman can pay for his sins and they're out of the picture and they're split up. It's time to turn the page away from the lackluster summer fall and hopefully begin a new chapter of WWE programming that will tide us over into the Royal Rumble. Basically what I'm saying is that what they've got going right now has gotten completely stale and flatlined. You need to stop and reboot. And how they're going to reboot it is getting the title on someone. I don't care if it's Bryan. I don't care if it's Orton. I don't care if somehow Sandow works it out that he gets a WWE shot. I don't care who the hell is holding that championship. Somebody needs to be holding it. Then get them away from one another. You have so many people on this roster that have not matched up against one another, and you've been stuck with these two guys. Big Show should not be in the situation that he's put in. There are plenty of other people that could have used this push. Triple H should not be featured as much as he is. I understand why they're doing it, but you also have Stephanie there as well. You have Triple H and Stephanie. You have Vicky Guerrero and you have Brad Maddox. Come on, people. There's a lot going on there in the authority role. And back in the day, there was Jack Tunney. Didn't even go to the shows. He was just filmed from whatever office building they had nearby and then sent out to the truck and they played it during their pre-recorded segment. That was your authority figure. So the fact that they have four on television right now and two of them are essentially owners of the company, it's getting to be too much. It's getting to the point where wrestling fans are being turned off by this. They don't. It's not that they hate them. They just don't want to see them. It's that heat we always call the Xbox heat, the go-away heat. It's not even that. It's just they're not standing up and booing them anymore. They're just sitting on their hands and waiting for the segment to be over. And that's the last thing you want in a wrestling arena. You don't want people just waiting for this to be over. You want them to be involved with every step of the process. And they buried Bryan so much over the last 2 months that people aren't believing that he's going to be WWE champion, or when he is WWE champion, they're not going to believe he's going to hold it for very long and he's going to get screwed out of it. So I say put the belt on Orton. Either have Bryan spin off to a different feud or spin him right into a Triple H feud if you want to go in that route. Have him battle him for a couple months and then go back to the WWE title. You need to have him be rebuilt for a little bit, and you're not going to get that immediately. So take a couple weeks, build him back up, get that out there. Maybe move Orton onto a program with Punk. Who knows? Whatever the idea is that you need a little time here. It's been screwed up the last couple months. It's been screwed up especially this month or the last two pay-per-views. And they need to start from scratch. And it's long overdue. And I'm just happy that this pay-per-view is coming simply because I think it's going to be the end of a lot of storylines that are overstaying their welcome. Okay, I'm done.
No, I agree with you, Matt. I think this pay-per-view needs to be the end-all, be-all pretty much for everything that's happened on the last couple months of, you know, Raw, SmackDown, whatever you want, whatever, any kind of WWE programming. There's been so much done that there's nothing left almost for these guys to do. And my biggest fear is that we're going to see either Daniel Bryan win the title and then go on to something else, which I don't really have a problem with, but you're going to see Randy Orton win the title and then not move on to a program with CM Punk, but move on to a program with the Big Show, and then we'll get 4 months of Big Show versus Randy Orton, and we'll see that match, main event, main event Survivor Series, when Daniel Bryan is stuck with the Shield still, which, you know, anytime Daniel Bryan faces the Shield, you know it's going to be a great wrestling match, but that's not kind of where you want to see Bryan right now. And like you said, they've kind of pushed, not demoralized, but he pushed and everything with Daniel Bryan these last couple months that even if he wins the WWE title this Sunday, which Shawn Michaels keeps saying that there's going to be a WWE champion, nothing's going to go wrong, no controversy, blah, blah, blah. You still don't know the next time I Raw, Daniel Bryan isn't going to come out and say that Daniel Bryan and Shawn Michaels were in cahoots and that he's going to strip Daniel Bryan of the WWE title. And that's part of the problem that they've had these last couple weeks because they have that night of champions. And then Battleground had the bad finish that, like you said, I agree that they're almost going to become more programmed to the people that watch Raw rather than the people that buy the pay-per-views. And that's why part of me hopes that someday the WWE Network finally gets off the ground and they end up airing pay-per-views on that network and you have to pay for the subscriptions to the network and then only, you know, have your big four or five pay-per-views that you have to actually have to pay for outside of the network programming. And I think that might be best for them long-term. I don't know how the dollars and cents will add up to that, and then the money goes from wherever to that, wherever to wherever. But the WWE Network might help pay the view and then not having to pay for three pay-per-views in the span of 7 months where you can just pay a flat fee a month just to have the network. But going from the WWE title picture, I guess we can just go on to the sudden return of John Cena. A lot of people were saying that he was going to be gone for 4 to 6 months. And then here he is coming back now. You know, he's going to come back to Hell in a Cell, I guess. You didn't, you know?
No, I said Survivor Series.
That long?
So, no, I thought he'd be back by Survivor Series. So he even superseded my prediction, which I thought my prediction compared to most people was extreme. And he's coming back like 3 weeks before that. No, the way that they were talking and my cousin's I can't even think right now. She worked and trained and is a trainer for a professional football team, and she's done work in hospitals and ERs and everything else, and she's trained and studied as a sports physician. And looking at it, and I asked her about a tricep tear, or if it's a partial tear or a full tear. She said by looking at it, she's like, if it's a full tear, he's going to be out 4 to 6 months. If it's a partial tear, he could be out 4 months. If it's something like that. If it's even less than that, who knows? Knowing John Cena and knowing what he's capable of doing, and I wrote this even during Bound for Glory, that he and AJ Styles need to be locked into a room and be tested by every single doctor imaginable because their bodies can sustain unbelievable punishment and they seem to walk away unscathed is unbelievable. But knowing John Cena and his recovery power and his determination, I knew he was going to be back sooner. So once she told me that if it's only a partial tear, it could be 4 months or less, that's what brought me right down to the Survivor Series because I'm like, that's going to be the earliest he could return. If it's only a partial tear, I didn't think that they would let when I say they, I say WWE and the medical team and the people who have to worry about John Cena being able to wrestle for the next 5 years or whatever it is, people who have jobs because of him, I don't think they would let him wrestle if it was a complete tricep tear. Because it wasn't a complete tear, and you could tell just from that type of verbiage, I thought for sure he'd be back by Survivor Series. I was still surprised that he's coming back Hell in a Cell. One, because why? It's Hell in a Cell. And two, it is another 3 weeks early. But, yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all that he's been back before Royal Rumble. I never expected him to be gone that long.
Yeah, I really think that if RVD had a longer contract with the WWE and maybe he added a couple more weeks too, I think we would have seen another RVD Del Rio match here, and they might have saved Cena for Survivor Series after that. But, you know, I guess they needed, I don't know if they thought they needed Cena, but I do think as far as, you know, Cena coming back though goes, I'm kind of happy that he's at least starting with the world title picture and having a match with Alberto Del Rio compared to being thrown right back down our throats in the WWE title picture and then pushing Daniel Bryan off to the side, which may still happen at some point, and then being inserted into the WWE title match at Hell in a Cell, something stupid like that, or having it be a triple threat match. So I'm kind of happy to see him, you know, go to the world title picture. I don't know if he's going to be on SmackDown or and Raw, or maybe, you know, just have Raw. So it's fresh for Cena. We always complain that we always see Cena in the WWE title picture and always the top. But he gets the world title picture now, and I'm perfectly fine with him fighting at Alberto Rio at Hell in a Cell. Obviously, his return has been hyped up. It's probably still the second or third biggest match, but probably the second biggest match on the card. But it's something different from Cena. And I personally, you know, I'll say this now, I'll probably regret it in a week or two, saying that at least I don't mind seeing him come back in the world title picture with Alberto Del Rio. And I guess, I don't know if you guys agree with me and what your thoughts are about him being put into the world title match. I guess, Cam, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Cena coming back and having a world title match right off the bat against Alberto Del Rio?
Well, like Matt said, I thought he would be back like around Survivor Series time or something around that. I think he would sit up a full 4 or 6 months. No way, John Cena. I don't know. We've had some time to like think about this, and I still really don't know what to think. I honestly think that John Cena is not going to win the World Heavyweight Title. I don't know which way they're going to go, and I don't. Hopefully, I don't want them to do the, you know, the obvious of how Del Rio will put him in the arm bar, and that'll just, you know, re-tear his issue, and they can just play the injury roll-up where he doesn't have to compete for a few weeks. But, I mean, that seems logical, and they could do that, and, you know, Del Rio could get some heel heat that he couldn't really achieve with the RVD feud like Justin and I thought was going to happen. So I think that they're still really keen on trying to get Del Rio over, and I guess the next best thing to do is have Del Rio beat up the number one babyface and, you know, beat up on the injured John Cena, and they can play up the whole Macy Bella angle since they like to use Brie with Randy Orton. They can do that because, you know, and I just think that, I mean, Del Rio is a good enough talker to kind of, you know, to terrify Nikki or something like that, but I don't see it lasting more than, let's say, Survivor Series. At the most, I don't even think they'll get a second match because there's no point for John Cena to be the World Heavyweight Title champion. I think people might disagree with that. They say that he'll elevate the title and all that, but whoever the next champion is just going to be a mid-card guy anyway, so they'll just regress right back to where the title is. I don't think it's due any deficit, and I really don't think there's a point to take the title off Del Rio right now because all of the guys that could have been a World Heavyweight Champion right now, like Fandango and Curtis Axel and guys like that, they've pretty much hit their plateau. So I think the most logical thing is to try to get the most heat they can on Del Rio and really try to establish him as the number two heel in the company.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
As far as Cena being in the world championship picture, I just think it's a way to get him back on television without having him intersect with the Triple H, Randy Orton, Daniel Bryan storyline right off the bat. I don't think he's staying in the world championship picture unless they really want to keep them separate. If they are completely sold on the idea that they need to keep these two storylines separate, they could put the world title on him, and that would keep him apart. But the only way that it would work is if he came over and he was a heel, and he was Triple H's guy. That's the only way it would work, because there's no way Triple H is going to say, John Cena's not the face of – I don't want him to be the face of the company. He is the face of the company. So there's absolutely no reason why he should be inserted into that. There's no logical reason – on how he could be. As far as Del Rio goes, Del Rio hasn't gotten over. It's been, four years? He hasn't gotten over. He can't get over with the championship. He had a really strong push this year, and it started looking good, and it just flatlined again. He's reached as high as he can get, and I don't think it's going to get any better. His match with John Cena will be passable. They always are. And then afterwards, who knows who he moves on to. If he moves on to a returning Rey Mysterio, who returned last week, he can move on to, if they bring back Wade Barrett, they can move him on to Wade Barrett. They can move him on to Dolph Ziggler if they want to move Ziggler back over there. He can move on to pretty much any babyface on the roster right now because he's not really connecting with anyone. So until they find a strong babyface, go against him and take the belt off of him, it's just going to feel like it's you're sitting in a rotation waiting for him to just give it up. He's not anything special. I think people are starting to realize that, and it's starting to get a little repetitive that we see him every month doing the same promo, doing the same gimmick, doing the same attacks and kind of cheesy old school style foreigner heat, and it's getting boring. And for a world heavyweight champion to be that boring, to the point where I don't even want to see him on television, or I don't even care about the belt. I don't even like it. It's just to the point where he needs to go, and it really shows the lack of depth in the main event that they have right now.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going all the way back to, you know, WrestleMania 27, and then him winning the Royal Rumble before that, and then getting the world title match at that WrestleMania, and I remember thinking, I was actually at that show live. I remember going in thinking that, you know, Del Rio is winning the world title here. He won the Rumble. You know, it makes the most sense for him to win. And then, first of all, not only the world title match being the opening match on the show, and then him losing, you know, to Edge in that show, when all this hype seemed to come up that people thought Del Rio was going to win the world title and he's going to be the next big main eventer, but he's going to be the next main event stay in the WWE. And then he lost the match. And the next month at Extreme Rules, when, you know, Edge had to retire, and it was Del Rio versus Christian. And, you know, you kind of obviously, I thought, maybe assumed going in that Christian was going to win that match because everything that happened. And then he lost the world title there again. And then you're like, okay, you know, that's kind of weird because he seemed like destined to be the world champion and hold the title for a long time. And then he ended up winning the WWE title Money in the Bank. He started getting more, you know, heat behind him. He ended up cashing it in and winning the WWE title. And then you thought again, okay, you know, maybe he's going to get another push. Maybe they're going to finally put everything into him. And then he lost the title to Cena again the next month and then won it back. And then a month later lost it to CM Punk at the Survivor Series. And then he's just kind of been, you know, there ever since. And I agree with you, Matt. I think that any chance they had at pushing Del Rio as a top guy in the company is pretty much completely gone now. I mean, I know they want to keep him around because out of all the, you know, Mexican wrestlers that they have left, he's the only reliable one because you never know when Rey Mysterio's knee is just going to buckle or fall off on him. And you never know the next time Sin Cara is going to botch a move and dislocate a finger and make it seem like he's separated his shoulder. So we don't know anything like that. And having Del Rio be at least your solid go-to Mexican guy to reach out to that fan base a little bit makes sense. But I think as far as him ever being a top heel, a guy that becomes involved in the main event picture in the WWE anytime soon, I think that's pretty much gone by the wayside now. I think kind of where he is in the world title picture right now, with how the world title is kind of booked as the clear secondary title compared to the WWE title, is good for him. But I don't think he's ever going to get anywhere past that. And even after he loses the world title to somebody, I don't know what you do with him after that other than kind of just have him stick around in the mid part, and maybe he ends up being a guy who in a couple of, or a year or two, is just so far down and they have nothing left for him, they end up releasing him because there's just nothing for him to do anymore and everybody gets soured on him. So having him there, you know, that whole Hell in a Cell thing, well, I guess it's just a good transition into our Hell in a Cell preview. Right now, I believe there is 7 matches for the card. Let me count 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, 7 matches. I do think out of all the matches left, the last 3 pay-per-views that they've had, this Battleground and Night of Champions, this has the potential to be maybe the best one as far as a wrestling standpoint goes. I know I personally put Battleground a little ahead of Night of Champions just for the fact that the Battleground had the Rhodes Family versus Shield match, which I thought was probably the best match out of those two pay-per-views. But I think compared to the other two, Hell in a Cell has the potential to be the best out of all of them. So going right into, I guess we'll start with the pre-show match that I have here, for the Intercontinental Championship, Curtis Axel versus Biggie Langston. I guess I'll start, and I personally thought one thing I pointed out in my Raw report this past week is that I liked how they handled Biggie's face turn after what happened on SmackDown and then transitioned over to Raw. I liked the first week of handling how they did it. They had him come up and challenge Curtis Axel to a match right away. And then even when he was getting beat down by Curtis Axel and Ryback, he still stood his ground, looked strong. And then I think the best thing that they did during Raw was actually have him be in a tag match with CM Punk, because you have a guy in Punk who's obviously one of the most over, if not the most over guy they have on the roster. You're immediately associating Big E with Punk, so you establish him as a face. And since you had him in a tag team match, you get the crowd to get behind not only Punk, but also Big E Langston, because they're teaming together. So I really liked how the WWE handled Big E this past Monday on Raw after turning him face on SmackDown last week. As far as this match goes, I always said I think Axel shouldn't lose the Intercontinental title unless this is somebody that who could use the Raw, even though the IC title is kind of, you know, again, kind of like the world title, been down a little bit. I think just still having the IC title helps in the eyes of at least some fans, and I think Big E winning here makes the most sense, especially because it's on the pre-show, and if you're looking to get the crowd into the show right away, what better way to do it than have a title change and having a face win the title? So I'm going with Big E winning here. As far as Curtis Axel goes, I'm wouldn't be surprised if after this pay-per-view, depending on how the Ryback CM Punk match goes, he's just almost put back down the card. Paul Heyman is going to be off TV for a while. He has just gotten. I was on board with him becoming the Paul Heyman guy in the beginning, so I thought maybe it might help him out a little bit, but nothing has really helped out there, and Axel is just pretty much done as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what they could do to resurrect him as a character on TV goes, but I'm going with the newly faced Big E here to win the Intercontinental title.
Yeah, I actually wrote that. I thought it was rather ironic that before Curtis Axel was deemed as the new Paul Heyman guy, that the rumor was that Big E Langston was going to be brought in as the new Paul Heyman guy. So it's rather ironic that it's taken this long for them to get to that point, and I agree with you. Big E Langston showed a lot of his potential in NXT as a babyface champion. He was over, immensely over, to the NXT crowd simply by being himself and being, I mean, even when he was a heel, he was over. And he's got the moves, he's got the charisma. I mean, the fact that that man can jump that high and move that quickly for a guy that size, and there's a lot to say for that. He's basically Mark Henry with speed and personality. So, at least personality on television. Mark Henry has a lot of personality, you just don't get to see it. So, I absolutely think that the ship has sailed on Curtis Axel. It kills me because I felt like this guy had a lot of potential, and it didn't work. It seemed like it never meant to work, and it just wasn't going to work, and it just didn't. And the WWE, I thought they were going to drop the IC belt last week, or not last week, the last pay-per-view. And I thought he was going to lose the R-Truth, and then he was going to drop the title to Vandango. Because Vandango's been on such a freaking winning streak every single week that he's on television, that I thought that was the next natural progression for him. And you could get a little nice little token piece to R-Truth for being there for so long. Instead, they gave him Don West's old job in the WWE now. Besides that point, yeah, I think Axel's going to be gone rather quickly. I think Big E Langston is going to be a babyface IC champion. I don't know for how long. I don't know if he'll be dominant. I think he might be one of those guys who is thrown in there against guys like Fandango and I can't think of other mid-card guys, maybe a Cesaro or somebody like that. Yeah, and just throw him out there and get a match or two out of him, and then somebody's going to cheat and get the belt off of him, and they'll be the new IC champion. I don't think he's going to have a long reign at the belt, but I definitely see the title change happening on Sunday.
Okay, and Cam?
Yeah, I think we're going to be 3-for-3 here. I mean, I've been waiting around for Big E Langston to turn babyface, like, Matt, so when I first started for HTC and watching NXT, like, he is character has himself and his charisma comes through way, like, so much more as a babyface than a heel. He has to kind of be, like, a tough guy who doesn't say too much, but as a babyface, he can be himself, like he is on Twitter, making jokes, and I think that, like you, Matt, we thought Curtis Axel could have been something, and it's kind of sad that he isn't anything. I think he kind of is just going to get the Wade Barrett treatment now. He's just going to go back. They're going to get something new for him, and he's going to come back, and he probably won't get over again. And but, yeah, I think Biggie Langston is going to be the champion. I think that he maybe be Babyface champion for a while. I like to see him and Fandango just get a run. And I think Biggie, if I mean, he's gotten better in the ring over the last year and a half, so I think he could hold his own in the ring with Fandango over the next month or so and have a nice little fresh feud for the Intercontinental title.
All right, so that's one word three for three here. Next one up, this match actually gets added on SmackDown this Friday. So if you don't want to listen to a SmackDown spoiler, you can tune off for the next minute or two. But it's not a big one. It is Los Matadores versus the Real Americans. Obviously, the whole time here is with Zeb Coulter, you know, and the Bull, and calling Los Matadores, you know, the illegals. I know when they first debuted and we did the show after, I said I wasn't that big of a fan of Los Matadores. I just thought after the whole Brutus Clay thing flopped and the... I thought after the whole Brutus Clay thing flopped and the Fandango thing flopped, I didn't know how this was going to get over. And I'm actually surprised, you know, the crowd at least into the matches that they've been doing with the whole Olay thing that they've been doing. And as far as this one goes, I would probably would assume that they're going to book Los Matadores to win for the simple fact of because they're the new fresh team and they want to see them get a win. But because I don't like them, I'm going to pick the Real Americans because I think that eventually I would like to see them get into the tag title picture because I think Cesaro and Swagger work very well as a team. And I know, like, the highlight of Cesaro is doing a giant swing and maybe we'll see him do the swing here into the Bull. Maybe 50 times in a row.
God, I hope so.
But I think maybe do the ball and then just toss him into the crowd kind of like it's a hammer throw. I think that'd be hilarious. Or maybe up, maybe to a nice soft landing spot on the stage. But I'm picking the Real Americans here simply for the fact that I want to see them win and get into the tag title picture eventually. Cam?
Wow, Justin's trying to write Los Matadores off TV already, having Cesaro throw one of them.
Somebody's going to steal the Bull.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I don't have the winner because the Real Americans have been on a winning streak, and that's kind of weird because they never let Antonio Cesaro win matches, so I'm kind of curious to see where that whole thing is going. I would just pop really bad if you see Zeb Coulter chasing around the Bull around the ring a couple of times, something like that. I think that's just like a nice little spot they could add in there. If I have to pick a winner, I guess I'm going to go last one to Los Matadores because the Real Americans have kind of been just there, so they guess they can afford a loss. I mean, they're on a pay-per-view, so that's good enough. And I guess we'll have a moment. I think that while the titles are kind of off the Shield, I think it was a nice transition to now really open it up to all these tag teams because you know Goldust and Cody Rhodes aren't going to be champions for very much longer, and I don't really see the Shield, even the WWE going back the route with having the Shield be the champions again for much longer. So I think we might get to see coming up in 2014 where we're going to have three or four different tag teams hold the title like it's the 1980s and 90s all over again. But I guess I'm going to go Los Matadores, and which will be Epico and Primo's first pay-per-view win ever, I'm assuming.
No, they were tag team champions. Oh, no, wait, no, they weren't. That was Carlito. Damn it.
You're on the unit anyway.
Yeah, I got the Matadores. There's no way in hell the Americans are pulling out a win here, especially since the Los Matadores debuted what 2-3 weeks ago. There's no way they're losing their first pay per view match. There's no way they're losing to essentially a jobber tag team as much as it pains me to say that. And they are absolutely going for an Antonio Cesaro babyface turn. Any match now, I don't see them being a tag team for very much longer. Even if this match pushes them over the edge, if you'll notice, any time they do lose, Cesaro's either gets pinned cleanly, or he's the one that always gets beat, and Swagger's nowhere to be found. So that's going to eventually feed into frustration, thinking that he can win by himself, and then you're going to see him take off as a single star. I do hope we have some bull tossing here. I did say when he was swinging Hornswoggle around that every arena in the world should be booing Santino Marella for stopping the midget tossing segment. There is no way that I am going to pay $60 and not get to see a little tiny man dressed in a bull costume be giant swung by a giant Swiss monster, who is extremely awesome on Twitter, because apparently he's a fan of our work and retweeted out to his thousands and hundreds of thousands of fans our website and our desktop wallpaper that you can find on our website, htcwrestling.com. Easy for me to say considering I made it up. But there's no way that the Americans are winning here. As much as I like Cesaro and I like Coulter, I can care less about Swagger. But as much as I like those other two, there's no way the Matadors are losing this match. And while they are a fun act now, they're going to be gone in a couple months. But they're fun for now, and that's all I'm going with.
Yeah, someday hopefully we'll be able to say that Cesaro gets a big push and becomes the main eventer down the line. We can say that, well, when he was still a jobber tag team in the WWE, he retweeted our work and we were always the biggest fans of him before everybody else got on his bandwagon. So, yes, thank you, Antonio Cesaro, for tweeting that site back out to us, or tweeting your site back out to your fans. That got us a lot of hits. So thank you very much for that, good sir.
I think there's going to be a lot of Claudio Castagnoli fans that are going to be pissed at you for saying that we were on the bandwagon first.
You're probably like, all those indie guys are going to come after us now. We're going to start getting those hateful comments on our site from them.
Damn, you don't have to moderate all those.
Next match on the list is the Divas Championship. We have AJ taking on Brie Bella. These two fought on the last pay-per-view, and AJ ended up retaining the title. Doing a rematch here kind of makes me almost think that they're going to take the title off AJ and give it to Brie, but I'm going to hold off there because I still think AJ is the best performer in the company, and I think that she is the person that should be holding the title until somebody like an Emma or a Paige comes up from NXT and takes the title from her and gets a new feud here. I just actually did my quick hits for NXT this past week, and one thing I brought up is how much better the Divas division is in NXT compared to WWE. I mean, Summer Rae is actually decent down there in NXT. Emma is good. Paige is good. All of those characters down there pretty much blows out anything that's on the current roster. So hopefully sooner or later that they start getting those two called up and AJ gets some new Divas to feud with. So for now, I'm going to hold out and say that AJ ends up retaining the title here, and maybe we get a Tamina breakup somewhere down the line and they start feuding with each other. But I just think it's smart and good for everybody that AJ holds on to the title, for the time being. Cam?
Yeah, I agree. I think I could see them taking the title off AJ, but I don't really see the point. She has lost steam, but I think that's due to her concussion and just really lack of creative booking. I hate Emma. Sorry. you're probably a really cool person and stuff, but I just hate her character. Like, and as much as I love fun wrestling characters, I wish that her and Santino would be a tag team and they would just ship them off to, I don't know, wrestling purgatory or something. As far as the match goes, I'm still going to go AJ Lee, and she retains. I mean, she got the freaking title tattooed on the back of her neck. Come on, they can't take the title off of her.
She didn't get the title on her neck. She got a date on her neck.
I just got the title belt.
No. God, I would have blasted her much harder if she had gotten the Divas title on her neck.
Yeah, after finally 3 weeks of covering NXT, if you saw my tweet before the show, it got stuck in my head to the point because Emma was on the show this week, and I caught myself doing the humming thing in my head, and I kept trying to tell myself,
God.
No, 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 Yeah, and I caught myself after the show. I was walking in my kitchen, and I just started doing it. And after about 5 seconds, I stopped myself and said, "Oh dear God!" It's in my head now. It's never getting out.
If you start blowing bubbles, we're shipping you off to rehab. Sorry.
Yes, if I start blowing bubbles, I feel free to ship me off to whatever rehab you have and take care of that for me. Hopefully, it'll be the one time I catch myself doing that. Matt, what are your predictions on the match?
We're going to send you to wrestling rehab, also known as New Japan Pro Wrestling. So you get to go sit over there for a while. I have two words for the winner of this match, and that's Total Divas. They didn't take the belt off of AJ last pay-per-view, because they needed another couple weeks of reality television of the E! Network and to build up to a season finale, which will be Brie Bella winning the Divas Championship with Daniel Bryan standing by her side. So, yeah, no. Brie Bella's walking away with Divas Championship. There's no doubt in my mind. AJ is the best Divas performer in the company right now. You're not going to get a Paige-AJ feud. They are far too similar in character. I'm excited to see Ric Flair's daughter eventually come up when she gets a little bit more training. Her athleticism in the ring astounded me the first couple times I saw her. But Paige, Summer Rae, I like Bayley doing the Mickey James gimmick, super fan gimmick. There's a lot of girls down there that can add a lot to WWE TV. But how many girls are featured on WWE TV right now? I mean, you can't even find Caitlyn anywhere. So it's a little dicey. And honestly, AJ will get the title back, and I think she'll get it back relatively quickly. But the E! Network needs a season finale, and that finale is going to be Brie Bella winning the Divas Championship.
You may know for Caitlyn. Posture Caitlyn is finally getting one. I saw a picture of her. She tweeted out the idea where she's on actual full-size grant now. It doesn't have some hair going on anymore. So, just real quick, thank you, Caitlyn, for getting rid of that terrible hairstyle that she had. But moving on next to the tag title match, just put together this past Monday Night Raw after, obviously, you know, the number one contender was made. Rhodes family, Cody Rhodes and Goldust, defending against the Shield and the Usos. And I personally think this has the potential to be a match of the night candidate. I think the Shield, anytime anybody has good chemistry in the ring with the Shield, and we saw in the match that the Shield and the Rhodes family put on a Raw and at Battleground, and we even go back and saw the match that the Shield and the Usos had at Money in the Bank, and I think these three have potentially put on a very good match in the ring. They're all very capable workers in there. It should be a very fun match. Hopefully, I want to see it get at least 15 minutes on this show to maybe Raw. I think it would be a good, solid opening match where you see these guys get everybody into it with the near falls and the quick moves. And, you know, you got guys like the Roman Reigns doing impact moves and the crowd's been behind Goldust since he came back. So I think this has real potential to be a show stealer and a solid match that I can get for this pay-per-view. As far as the outcome goes, I think the Rhodes family is going to retain here. They just put a title on them a couple weeks ago. I actually thought they might hold off until the pay-per-view to have that match happen again. But they did it on the Raw. That's when they won the titles, and I don't think they're going to lose them anytime soon. But we kind of all said, you didn't know when the Shield were going to lose the tag team titles until it made sense, and it kind of makes sense here that they have Cody Rhodes and Goldust involved in this program with Triple H. The Shield can kind of lose the titles and maybe transition into more being just the henchmen of Triple H and doing dirty work without to worry about having the tag titles at the same time and wondering when they're going to lose them. And like Cam said earlier, you have the Rhodes family who can defend the titles against other tag teams in the division, whereas the Shield, you just kind of had the Shield either doing triple threat or six-man tags and not really defending the titles that much. So I think the Rhodes family retains here. Like I said, I think it has the potential to be the match of the night. And I think I see the Shield transitioning on to more of a henchman type role for Triple H in the near future. And I just don't think the Usos are going to win the tag titles. They're just there to put an extra tag team in there and get some pay-per-view pay. Matt?
I totally forgot what I was going to say. Wow. I have the Rhodes Brothers Wedding. They just got up new music. They came out with new music on Monday. There's no way they're going to split them up the week after they get new music. So, yeah, the Rhodes Brothers are a great story. They're a good tag team. This is the best shape I've seen Dustin in a long time. And trust me, I've been watching them. Back in WWF when he did a short little run with Dusty, over following his career through WCW as TV and U.S. champion, tag team champion. I've been a big Dustin Rhodes fan for a long time, and this is the best shape I've ever seen him in. And having that veteran influence in a tag team and now in this triple threat three-way tag team match, I think he's going to add a lot to that match as far as just laying it out and being able to pace everybody. And the six men in this match, seven if you include Dean Ambrose, can all work very well, and they all work very well together. We've seen that with the Shield and the Usos, and we've seen that between the Shield and the Rhodes. So meshing them all together, I think, is only going to be a win. Like you said, it might be the match of the night. I can fully see them stealing the show. I think it's a safe bet that it's going to be a strong tag team match one way or another. I do see the Rhodes Brothers coming away, retaining the championships, at least from this pay-per-view. The real question is that considering pay-per-view trends, will the World Heavyweight Championship match be the first match on the show? But it has John Cena in it, so I'm torn. That's the betting match for me, and not even the winner, just that part of it. But for as far as the tag team titles go, yeah, I'm going Rhodes. I don't think they can take them off of them that quickly.
And Cam,
I wish they kind of just would have kept it like just a tag team on tag team match. I don't really understand why they would have to kind of just put.
They finally have a tag team division. You just feature two people. That's like, oh, I want a Divas division, but I only want two girls on the show. I'm like, come on.
In a perfect world, they would just be AJ Lee versus Mickey James headlining every wrestling show I go to. But
think about this though, right now, all of us. We're always talking about a Divas division and a tag team division because it always seems like it's very lackluster. There are five tag teams that are going to be wrestling on Sunday's pay-per-view. Five. I don't even remember the last time the WWE had five active tag teams. And now they're all going to be competing on one show. That is an awesome sign if they continue with that pace. And they're not all, like, thrown-together teams either. There's two teams that are not actual teams. The Real Americans are kind of thrown together, and the Rhodes Brothers are kind of thrown together. But besides that, all the other people are actual tag teams, and they're all on a pay-per-view. That's incredible to me. I don't remember the last time that happened. Anyway, Cam, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that is pretty incredible, especially when I ranted and raved about it for probably 6 months. I lost my train of thought. I don't even know what we're talking about. I agree with everybody. I think the Rhodes family is going to be the champions. Eventually, they're going to lose them to someone. I'm not sure. One would assume the primetime players, but how are you going to get to a babyface tag team versus a babyface tag team is going to be up for the WWE. And I like that. I like you said with how Goldust is just going to have influence on this match. I think that we're going to see some pretty good spots with Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins and things of that nature. But I just don't like Usos, and it kind of takes away from, like, the emotional investment between these two tag teams. I mean, the Shield have the fifth longest tag team title run in history, and then they lost the title the night they claimed that fifth spot. So, you know, there's got to be some sort of emotional tie, and then want the titles back, and then to add in a tag team that, to be frank, didn't really do anything for the Shield's tag team title run is kind of pointless to me, but it will add the high spots that Goldust really can't provide for with, like, Seth Rollins or something like that. And in the end, we're going to see the road.
I'm sorry. The Usos are over. I don't know how they did it, but they are ridiculously over in the live crowd. Like, when they come out and when they're winning, or whether it's their entrance or they pick up a win or everything, whatever arena they're in, that place pops. So the Usos are way over, and I think they are much more over than I think anybody really thinks because the Shield is at another level. So I think we have a bad judge of how over the Usos really are on the scale, just because the Shield are usually battling main eventers, and that's why it's kind of skewed. But I have absolutely no problem with them being in this match. I think they should have had a tag title run a little while ago. I was actually pissed off that they're not in the new WWE video game. Like, how the hell do you leave them out of it? But that's besides the point. Like, the fact that they're in this match, and I've been watching their matches, and when I went to Raw not too long ago, and Justin, you could, I don't know if they were on the show you went to recently, but they are way over with the crowd, and it's incredible how it happened. It kind of just happened organically, but they definitely deserve a spot in this match.
No, I agree. When I went to those two house shows in August, they were pretty over, especially with their entrances. They are pretty
okay,
over. I'm not saying
you
that
just said that they shouldn't be in this match, and then you just agreed with what I said.
Well, I don't think they should be in this match, because this match has it's like having Randy Orton versus Daniel Bryan, and then just putting in The Miz in the match, just because The Miz will make the match better. Like that, you know?
No,
like,
he wouldn't.
Okay. You're defeating my point, Matt. But
no,
I mean,
but I'm saying, like, emotional. They've really built up this match as being a three-way feud for the titles. They've kind of gotten away from the idea that it's the brothers thing and them capturing the gold. Just on last week's Raw and the week before that, they're building this up as being the Usos are pissed off that they got the Rhodes got a tag team title shot before they got it, when they were the number one contenders. So this is really all about the championship. I don't see any emotional investment in that at all. I think it's all about being a champion. I'm not going to say it's all about the gold, because the damn things are bronze, even though they keep referring to them as tag team gold. But yeah, this is all about the titles. I think that's a perfect way to book this match, and that's why I have no problem with them being in the match at all.
Okay, then fine, I agree. I agree with what you say, and I still pick Cody Rhodes and Goldust to win.
I talked Cam into submission.
I guess the one thing I want to add to this question, I wish this match was happening 2 months later and this was a ladder match at TLC, because I think if this was a ladder match at TLC, this match would be great.
God,
I mean,
you want Goldust to go back on the drugs? I mean, putting that... he's not young anymore, and ladder matches are not fun. I'm happy he's in the shape that he's in. I don't want to throw a ladder at him.
Alright, I think moving on now, I think it's a good time to next match here. It's a handicap match that will take place inside Hell in a Cell, CM Punk versus Ryback and Paul Heyman. We were going over stuff before as far as the build to certain matches in the last couple weeks on WWE TV. This one didn't get brought up, but I don't want to speak for everybody else, but I feel like almost everybody else would agree that this just needs to wrap up. I mean, as much as we like CM Punk, and as much as we like Paul Heyman, and as much as we like them as promo men, they've pretty much been doing almost the exact same promo for, I want to say, the last month or two, as far as talking about what they're going to do to the other one. I will say, though, Paul Heyman's Ultimate Warrior, almost like cocaine-like thing like he used to do in the 1980s, was kind of funny watching this past week on Raw. Well, I'm not saying it was great, but I'm just saying that I thought it was hilarious watching him go into Ultimate Warrior. When I was waiting even for him to talk to anybody about spaceships being loaded with rocket fuel, and talking about crashing a plane with Hulk Hogan, and I thought he was going to get to the point where he would replace Hulk Hogan with CM Punk. We just thought maybe it was the actual Ultimate Warrior. But that's besides the point.
I thought RVD somehow stuck backstage again.
Like we said kind of before, we kind of agree that everybody in this storyline needs to move on from one another. And whether it's CM Punk taking out Paul Heyman with the GTS and having Heyman off TV until Brock Lesnar comes back, or even the other way around, where we have, you know, there's been talk that CM Punk is wrestling injured again. That guy's been, he's been banged up more than anybody else in recent months with his knee and his back and everything that you see that you read, everything that you read that said that he's been bothering him. Maybe it's also the other way around, where Ryback and takes out CM Punk, and we don't see Punk return until the Royal Rumble, and then he's entered there and ends up winning or whatnot, anything like that. So there's two different ways they could go with this. It's somebody, I think somebody at the end of this is going to end up off TV, and I think because CM Punk is more important right now to them than Paul Heyman is, I could see, I'm picking CM Punk to win here. I think everybody finally moves on from this point. CM Punk gets the win. He delivers the GTS to Paul Heyman. Everybody's happy, and everybody moves on from there. I thought in a perfect world where my WrestleMania scenario played out, where CM Punk gets rid of Heyman here, and then Heyman comes back with Brock Lesnar, who wins the WWE title, and then Punk wins the Rumble. They transition into that rematch at WrestleMania 30. What happened? But if you believe everything you read and the rumored match that it's going to be The Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania this year, that doesn't happen. So I'm still picking CM Punk to win here. Where he goes from here after this, assuming it ends this Sunday, is kind of interesting to me because there's not really too many clear-cut options out there unless he moves on to somebody like Randy Orton, but then you wonder who does Daniel Bryan keep. I almost feel like it's a matter of time before CM Punk gets inserted into the whole power authority storyline with Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. I'm surprised they've actually been able to keep them apart as long as they have, but it's to the point where you look at it, like I said, you don't know what else there is out there for him as far as not getting involved with that and then who there is to feud with next. I don't think you can feud for the world title with Alberto Del Rio. And then after that, you look at the heels on the roster, and there's really not too much. I don't think anything can happen with the Wyatt family because he seems to be in line with The Miz, and then Kane's rumored to be coming back soon, so I don't see anything like that happening there. So I think it's only a matter of time coming up that CM Punk either A, gets reinserted into the WWE title picture, or just gets inserted into the power or the power struggle storyline with Triple H and Stephanie McMahon, and maybe we see CM Punk start wrestling The Shield in the next couple months before moving on to WrestleMania season. So I think it's interesting to see what's going to happen with CM Punk down the line, but I think as far as this pay-per-view goes, we're going to see CM Punk win, ends up pinning Paul Heyman finally, and then everybody moves on, which I think is just for the betterment of not only the WWE product, but for CM Punk, for Ryback, for all those parties involved. Cam?
Yeah, I agree with everything you say, except for, like, as much as I don't like Ryback, Ryback has fought and scraped his way back to where he is again, and if he takes another pay-per-view loss, where does Ryback go? I think CM Punk, we always say that he doesn't need a pay-per-view win because he's CM Punk, but I think that this kind of is boiling into a head where CM Punk's going to win, Paul Heyman's probably going to go away for TV for a while, and where does that leave Ryback? Kind of don't really care, but that is kind of a question for Ryback and for the WWE to figure out because he, like I said, worked his way up. He actually wants to be a WWE superstar, so, I mean, there's, like, that factor of him wanting to actually do it and him wanting to do whatever it takes to get into that role, and they just need to find a spot for Ryback, and right now there's not really a spot for him other to be with Paul Heyman, but if Paul Heyman's going to go away, there is a bigger picture, and Ryback obviously isn't part of it. I think, like you said, I think we're going to get somewhere where maybe Paul Heyman is going to try to climb the cell to try to get away from Punk, and Punk will chase up after him, and he'll hit the GTS, and that's how the match will end. I think that will be a nice little way to end the match, the feud, and what CM Punk goes on to next is kind of up in the air. I mean, he could kind of lay low and wait around for WrestleMania season, but I think we need to see as much of CM Punk as we possibly can if he just decides to retire at and keep his body at a better health and not wrestling until he's 50, 60 years old.
And Matt?
I agree with most of the things that you were saying. I as well have CM Punk winning just to, like I said when we were talking earlier, just to end another chapter of another story. And Heyman, I think, is going away for a while, probably going away for the holidays, and we'll see him back around Royal Rumble, maybe getting Brock Lesnar in the Rumble. Who knows? But I definitely see Punk winning. I see him injuring Heyman to the point where Heyman has to go away for a while. I see maybe a week or two of matches with Ryback because Ryback's pissed off that CM Punk beat the ever-living crap out of Paul Heyman. So we get that wrapped up pretty quickly. And then I can't see CM Punk moving over and feuding with Alberto Del Rio for the world title. That's what I was trying to think of before when we were talking about Del Rio and who he would move on to next. I can see him moving on to moving with Punk. And I would be okay with that. If you notice, lately they've been promoting special appearances of CM Punk on SmackDown, and they've become less and less special because he's showing up more and more over on that show. So while I still think he's going to be on Raw and he's still going to be a major focus, because they can't put him in the world title picture, and if he's not going to be feuding with Randy Orton, I absolutely see him going over and feuding with Alberto Del Rio. And, hey, who knows? Maybe he'll make Del Rio legitimate or at least entertaining. But right now, there's not many ways he can go, and that seems like the only viable option to me unless they do go with a Randy Orton CM Punk feud. Either way, I think he's going to be in the title. He's going to be the title hunt going into Survivor Series. I think he's their next guy.
And then I guess that's a perfect transition into the world title match here. Alberto Del Rio against returning John Cena. I'd like to start right back to you, Matt, since you were talking about it. I guess you're maybe seeing John Cena winning here, I guess.
No, I have Del Rio. I have Del Rio winning. It's hard to say. You know what? You're killing me. I had Del Rio winning. Not clean, but I had Del Rio winning. I'm going to say John Cena wins the match until Del Rio keeps the championship. I think that's the safest booking for everybody. John Cena's not walking away with the World Heavyweight Championship, I don't believe. It would be weird. I don't know where they would go from there unless Del Rio won it back at Survivor Series. And unless they're invested for some reason in a strong feud between Del Rio and Cena, because they want Del Rio to be over so badly, I don't see Cena doing anything special here. I see him coming back, having his triumphant return, and then Del Rio getting disqualified or counted out or some sort of shenanigans going on where he keeps the title and Cena still gets his moment and still wins and whatnot and lays out Del Rio. Or maybe you see a Rey Mysterio sighting or something. I'm going to change up my pick. I had Del Rio winning. I'm going to change it to Cena winning with Del Rio retaining the title. I just don't see a belt switch here. It doesn't make any sense.
Kim?
The only title, I mean, I think I'd still pick AJ Lee I think this is probably the only title that doesn't change hands. Or, no, I'm completely wrong. Take all that away. John Cena's not going to win the title. Like we've talked about this earlier, it doesn't make any sense for him to be the World Heavyweight Champion, and it's either going to go two ways. It's going to go the way Matt said, where Del Rio gets counted out or something stupid and John Cena still gets the moment in front of the live crowd, or they're going to go how I mentioned earlier, the injury route where Del Rio beats or, you know, doesn't, you know, hurt Cena and does his armbar illegally or something of that nature where he re-injures John Cena, then he can brag for a few weeks about how he hurt John Cena and then he can come back. But then, you know, if they do go that route, that means inevitably John Cena needs to become the World Heavyweight title or champion, because I don't see him losing cleanly to Del Rio. But I think that, you know, the more and more I think about it, I think they probably will go like the safe route where Cena will come out and they'll have a match for a little bit and Del Rio will do something to get himself disqualified and Cena gets the moment and the pop, and maybe, like you said, Rey Mysterio will come down and throw Del Rio back in the ring and Cena can hit his, you know, ever so famous fireman carry suplex, and that'll be that for that match.
Yeah, for me, this is the toughest match to predict for the night, because with John Cena coming back and just, like we said, being inserted into the world title picture, while it's different, it also leaves the outcomes, you know, pretty much wide open as far as what's going to happen. I kind of agree with both of you where I don't see John Cena being a long-term world heavyweight champion, so I don't think he's going to end up winning the title here for, even if he does win it, for a long time. I'm going to go with a complete long shot attempt here, and I'm going to say that Cena ends up winning the match and winning the world title, but then is taken out by Alberto Del Rio after the match, and he puts the cross arm breaker on his bad arm. And then we finally see Damian Sandow come out and cash in his Money in the Bank contract. And I think if you ever want to maybe, I know I personally haven't liked the way Sandow has been booked recently. He hasn't won a lot of matches. But if you ever want to elevate
when does
the
Money
in
the Bank winner win matches?
What was that?
I said, when does a Money in the Bank winner win matches?
Oh, yeah, never. Absolutely never. It seems like the last couple of years. But if you ever want to maybe elevate somebody and have them do something strong, I think there'd be no better way than to have Sandow come out and end up pinning John Cena with the Money in the Bank contract, end up becoming the world champion. And then you could have Sandow come out for the next couple of weeks bragging about how he was the man that pinned John Cena and beat him for the world title. And then you have your easy setup there for a rematch down the line. I just think if the WWE wants to shake things up and get out of the status quo that they've been having the last couple months, I think one big thing to do would be to have Cena win, Del Rio take him out, and then have Sandow come out and cash in. I know pretty much I knew right away going into Valley Round the second Sandow brought it up and not talked about cashing
yeah.
in
oh,
after
yeah.
the hard performance there. You knew he wasn't going to do it. So,
well, now,
I mean,
now that you... Sorry, now that you bring it up, it makes perfect sense because he hasn't been on television and they haven't brought it up once. So it makes absolutely perfect sense that he would cash in on Sunday because nobody's thinking about it. I can see that happening in a split second now that you mention it.
So, yeah, that's my pick for this Sunday. Cena wins, Del Rio takes him out. And then you transition into either, you know, a triple threat somewhere at Survivor Series, or you just bring in Rey Mysterio and move Del Rio back over to Mysterio and Sandow over to Cena. And that just leaves your options wide open as far as that goes. So that's going to be my pick, is that Cena wins, Sandow cashes in. And then, excuse me, things are shaking up a little bit on SmackDown, and we see how everything plays out there down the line. Cam, I don't know, do you think something like, I know Matt just kind of says he sees something like that happening now. What about you, Cam? Do you see that possibly being something that happens now?
Yeah, I can see a Damian Sandow cash in, but I think my bold prediction, if we want to go that route, is going to come up for the next match.
Oh, okay. All right, well then we'll just go right on to you, Cam, here, since you just gave us that little teaser. The expected main event of the match, the main event of the show, you're in Daniel Bryan. Shawn Michaels as the special guest referee. So I'm just going to go right to you, Cam. How do you see this playing out?
I thought about this, and I usually overthink everything when it comes to professional wrestling because you're not supposed to overdo that, but I do it anyways. And if, like Matt was saying earlier, like, we need a champion, and I'm at the point where I didn't want to see Randy Orton the champion, but we just need a damn champion. And I think that if they want to play up this and keep this whole corporation, Triple H controls everything, momentum going, I think that you see Daniel Bryan hit that running drop kick and looks like it's going to be over, and he turns around and starts doing the yes, and then you see Shawn Michaels sweet chin music Daniel Bryan and put Randy Orton over it, and it's 1-2-3, and we don't really have to see Shawn Michaels after that. I mean, we could see him the next night on Raw, and he doesn't really have to explain himself. Triple H can just say he had his best friend in his pocket, we have a WWE champion, and then once again the babyface Daniel Bryan, which he'll continue to lose momentum, but that keeps him at the number one contender because he didn't lose cleanly. He got screwed over once again, and we can just continue the cycle. So that's my bold prediction, that we get like a quote-unquote heel turn from Shawn Michaels.
I could see that happening. Like I said, with adding Shawn Michaels into this match adds a whole new element to it, and I'm not surprised that he's brought back on TV. I mean, it seems like almost it was kind of the same way back when Shawn Michaels was a part-time wrestler. Anytime things were starting to struggle or they needed somebody, Vince would call Shawn, and Shawn would come back from his couple-month hiatus and end up being in a main event program with somebody like Randy Orton for the WWE title. So I see why they should brought Shawn Michaels back. it almost makes me curious that maybe there's more of a long-term picture to this, and they're going to start maybe playing up possibly a Shawn Michaels return to the ring. I still personally don't see it happening. But it's always in the back of the head. You never know, like, you know, Shawn Michaels and Triple H never wrestled at WrestleMania. And even though it's not something I'd want to see on the line, I can think of about five people off the top of my head that I'd rather see Shawn Michaels wrestle in a return match at WrestleMania than Triple H. It's something you have to think of. I personally don't think it'll happen. I don't want it to happen, but you never know. It's out there. I'd rather, like I said, I'd much rather see Shawn Michaels wrestle Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, you know, anybody like that. But going back to the WWE title match goes, as I said earlier, there's a lot of moving parts to this that you saw this past Monday on Raw in the final segment, where you have what kind of role could Big Show play in the match? Will Shawn Michaels screw somebody? What's Triple H going to possibly do to maybe get involved in the match? There's so many moving parts to this that you just don't know. I am going with Daniel Bryan here. As much as I would have liked to see my scenario play out where Daniel Bryan faces Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble, I don't see that happening at all. I think we're going to see Daniel Bryan win here with some kind of help from the Big Show. I think we're going to get a Big Show Triple H match at Survivor Series, even though I don't think it's the right thing to do, because I still think you want to see Daniel Bryan play Triple H, and I prefer to see that at WrestleMania, which means Daniel Bryan should hold the WWE title a little bit for now. So I'm going to go with Bryan winning the title in the show on a high note, with Shawn Michaels holding his hand, his quote-unquote trainer that trained him to become a wrestler, holding his hand to end the show. So I'm going with Bryan here. I think, like I said, I think we see maybe a Big Show Triple H match. As much as I want to see again, I think we'll end up getting one more Daniel Bryan Randy Orton match at Survivor Series. As much as, like I said, I don't want to see it. I'd much rather see something along the lines of a traditional Survivor Series match where you do something like Daniel Bryan, the Rhodes family, and I don't even know who else you would throw in a Big Show against, you know, Randy Orton and the Shield. And then you do something kind of similar to that happened, I don't know, say maybe 5 or 6 years ago at Survivor Series, where the winning team gets control of Raw for a month, where each person gets to be GM for one show, where you could have the heels who would just do Triple H's bidding, and then, of course, if you had the faces running the show, that'd be something completely different. But I'm going to go with Daniel Bryan retaining here, because I'd much rather see that than Randy Orton retaining here. Matt?
Yeah, one way or another, we're going to see a screw job. It doesn't matter if it's Randy Orton winning or Daniel Bryan winning. If Daniel Bryan wins, I have a feeling it's because somebody raised the cage. We don't know who it was. And all of a sudden, Big Show is in there, and he knocks out Randy Orton. And again, Daniel Bryan looks weak, and he gets the championship, but he needed Big Show to do it. Kind of how the Rhodes brothers are running right now. If you see Randy Orton win, it's because they threw everything they possibly could at him, and Daniel Bryan had to fight everybody off, and then still lost to Orton. I see this as being a Randy Orton win. I don't see a heel turn. What I actually see is, like I said, a bunch of people running down to ringside. I see Big Show trying to fight off a couple of them, and then maybe somebody else trying to get involved. Bryan has to stop them. Shawn Michaels, sweet chin music to whoever that is, and Daniel Bryan turns around into an RKO, and you get a reluctant three count from Shawn, which we know he does so well from... Let's see, Bret Hart, Undertaker at SummerSlam, from Undertaker, Triple H at WrestleMania. Shawn Michaels knows how to play the conflicted referee, and that's what we're going to see on Sunday. So I see Randy Orton winning the championship, being the WWE championship, at least for a little while, and Daniel Bryan not getting it just yet. I'll be honest. It could be, he could be the 2014 Royal Rumble winner. I could see them going the Shawn Michaels, Chris Benoit route and throwing him in at number one, especially if the authority angle plays all the way out until the Royal Rumble, which it could. We all know how WWE books. So they could do maybe a Triple H team versus Daniel Bryan team at Survivor Series, and then go to maybe Triple H versus Daniel Bryan at TLC for Bryan's job, and Triple H is so pissed off at Royal Rumble or that he decides, you know what, Bryan, you think you're so great? Well, guess what? You get to be number one in the Rumble and see how you do. And then he goes on to win the entire thing. That is very well could be an option, especially if Bryan stays as hot as he is and they want to book that match for that far in advance. Off the top of my head, though, I still see CM Punk winning the 2014 Royal Rumble. Somehow, for some reason, he's like the one main eventer that hasn't won the Rumble yet. I just think that's it. It's his time. But because of how out of roll Bryan is and how over he is with the crowd, as long as he stays with that and as long as that keeps clicking, I can see that scenario playing out. But one way or another, I think Randy Orton is walking away with the WWE Championship on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm kind of almost in the same boat with you as far as the Royal Rumble goes, where I think they've done such a good job of keeping CM Punk away from this for so long that it almost seems logical that once everything wraps up with Heyman at the end of the year, once you start getting into WrestleMania season, he starts getting his focus back on the Royal Rumble and ends up winning there. Because I still personally think long-term it's building to Daniel Bryan versus Triple H in some form or fashion at WrestleMania. I don't think that's a match you want to do at any other show other than that, unless you do something where Daniel Bryan wins the WWE title and Triple H gets so fed up with Randy Orton or whoever he's been throwing at him trying to do that, they end up doing that match at something like a Royal Rumble where you see Triple H, God forbid, maybe win the WWE title again. But there's a lot of scenarios there. It's one thing I think as stagnant as this product has been in the last couple months, if everything wraps up this Sunday at Hell in a Cell, I think there's a good possibility for a good shakeup for things to come down the line. And I personally think WrestleMania season can't get here soon enough because that always seems to be when the WWE tries to do their best and put everything into high gear. So hopefully that ends
although
up
last year sucked. Remember we kept waiting for WrestleMania season to start and then it just did it?
Yep. You just kept waiting and waiting, and then once The Rock won the WWE title and John Cena won the Royal Rumble, it's kind of got the two more months of this now. No, I
it's
definitely
like, yay,
see
it's 2012 again.
Yeah, exactly. And then
except I get to go to
this
one
and
be upset.
Yeah, the second that happened, I just got to the point, I was like, oh, I can't believe I spent the money to go to this one now. But at least it's in New York, I get to see New York. But yeah, no, I definitely see that. So I guess before we sign off here, any final thoughts, Cam?
Can't wait till we get to WrestleMania season, though, even though it has kind of been like a letdown the last 2 years. But there is always hope, right?
So idealistic.
There's always that glimmer of hope with wrestling fans, and then you realize that halfway through it's like, oh, they're screwing it up again. Matt, anything else to add?
All I'm going to add is that so our listeners know, we are going to try to get back onto our regular recording schedule. We're going to try to work around everything that's going on, especially with the holidays coming up soon and all that fun stuff. But we're going to try to get back onto a regular schedule. I do have a guest lined up for our next top five. I don't know what it will be or when it will be, but we're looking at somebody who, I'm not giving away their name yet, but it's somebody who works with TNA at some level, and he's also good friends with a former guest on our top five show. So we might have somebody on for that. Also, for other listeners and readers of Inside Pulse and HCC Wrestling, I might have an interview with a former Money in the Bank holder coming down the line. I'm in email negotiations with WWE. So we'll see if that actually plays out at some point, and maybe we'll have somebody else new on the show. So those are a couple things coming down the pike that, see, I haven't been doing absolutely nothing for the last 2 months or whatever it's been.
You have an interview scheduled with Jack Swagger. Yes.
Oh, dear God, no. if they send me Jack Swagger, I might have to decline. You had to bring him up. I don't know if I could sit through that interview. Damn it.
Oh, man. I was trying to think of any bad ones off the top of my head, and he was the first one that popped in. So, the second you said WWE, I could have said Mr. Anderson, but you said WWE, so I took that out of the question.
Yeah. Damn it.
So that's it for the show this week. Next week is Halloween, so I don't know if we will be back next week. I don't know if you guys had planned on coming back for the Halloween edition or if you had other Halloween plans.
I have a 3-year-old who's going to be hopped up on candy, so I seriously doubt I'm going to be able to even hear myself think on Halloween.
Yeah, and I have to work. I have to work, too, so it looks like we're having a Halloween off, unless they're WCW is doing Halloween Havoc next Thursday. No?
Yeah.
You know what? The past pay-per-views have been so bad, I would buy a Halloween Havoc right now.
with a coal miner's golf match?
No, I'm thinking more of, what was that, the Blacktop Bunkhouse Road. That was at Spring Stampede. Coal Miner's Glove Match, yeah. I kind of like the Big Van Vader, Mountain of Doom or whatever he did with Sting. That was interesting.
Or the Chamber of Horrors match, one of those ones.
Oh, yeah, that one worked, where... Abdullah is trying to get electrified, and Mick Foley had to turn it back off and then on again in order for him to be fried. That's great.
Yep,
if anybody wants an awesome story, I think it was on Mick Foley's DVD, or was it Mick Foley's DVD or the Cage Match DVD? Just look it up on YouTube. Mick Foley, three levels or three something cage match. And talking about how the cameraman decided to zoom in on the fact that the switch is that's supposed to electrify an electric chair, which Abdullah the Butcher was supposed to be sitting in, was in the on position for a good about 10 minutes. And the director kept cutting to the cameraman who was shooting the fact that it was on, but it wasn't going to the chair. That was WCW, folks. So when you start lamenting about the fact that there's no WCW or how bad TNA is, there is some bad parts of WCW, there's some bad parts of WWE. Everybody sucks at some part of their life. That was a perfect example of it, but it was awesome all the same. Like I said, I would still pay for a Halloween Havoc right now. Because at least I'd be entertained.
Yes. Whether it's good or bad, you'd definitely be entertained. So, that's our show for this week. So it looks like we're not going to be back next week. So hopefully we will see you again here in 2 weeks, whether it's a top five show or just a recap of Hell in a Cell and everything that's happened in the last couple weeks. But for the HTC crew, Matt and Cam, this is Justin Soralka. We're signing off. Have a good night, everyone.